Hey everybody, welcome to Patriot to the Core podcast. Appreciate you coming back and listening to me. I am Thad Forrester, and before I get to our guest, I would like to encourage you to please rate this podcast on iTunes, and I guess you can rate it on Google Play too. I'm not sure, I'm not as familiar with that, but please rate it wherever you can, just to help get the word out, to help get found, and when people search for something podcast in the same genre as ours. So love for you to rate it and share it, and appreciate the support. So I do want to introduce Melanie Davis. Before bringing her in, Melanie is actually the she started Triumph Press publishing company, and she is actually the publisher of my book, My Brother in Arms. She was a big help to me, and big supporter of Mark, and she's a huge supporter of our military and our veterans. So she's always involved in some type of cause, usually multiple causes at one time, to really specifically support our veterans. And she is not only a self-proclaimed patriot to the core, she really is just that, and she lives it. It's great to have you with us today. Thanks for taking time out of your busy day to meet with me, and I wanted to introduce our listeners to you because you've done a lot of work with veterans. You have a Love Your Veterans campaign, and so I wanted to start out with that, is if you would introduce really why that's important to you and how you got involved in so much work with our veterans.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on your show. I've been looking forward to it. I am the founder of what I like to call a national campaign called Love Your Veterans, and it's a message. It's not a nonprofit. It's simply a message that we all need. It's not love our veterans. It's love your veterans. We need to really take it personal, because veterans have literally put their lives on the line for our freedom collectively, but individually as well. And I came to start this campaign because I'm an author, and I had started writing a book that's in what I call the Triumph Book Series. So in other words, it wasn't the first book in the series. It's the second one. It's called The Triumph Book Heroes. And it's a collection of 27 first-person stories from veterans spanning the decades from World War II up through our recent conflicts, all different ranks and wars. First-person accounts, because that's the best way for history to be told. And as I was interviewing these veterans, I originally had the intention of increasing patriotism by writing this book, because who loves our country more than those who are willing to die for it? But I found out that I had been an ignorant civilian, and I had no idea the battles that our veterans face when they come home from war. And so before I finished and published the book, I started this campaign.
Great. So, and I've read your books. When you think about the first book, the Triumph book, I mean, what brought that one about?
Yeah, so that's interesting. So the first book in the series is just the title, The Triumph Book, which is a collection of stories from people who've endured severe tragedies that found purpose and joy in life because of what they went through. And a lot of the stories in that book actually made the news when they happened, because they're so sensational. But what I was able to do is capture the stories that show how they got through such horrific experiences in their lives, and how they were able to continue to live with purpose and joy, and they have some great wisdom to share. I wrote that book really because I had gone through my own tragedy. I have a child named Bryn, and she's my third child. Being a writer, I keep a diary, or a journal, I guess, each time I have a baby. I'll actually go and buy that journal when I have an ultrasound. I'm one that will find out what I'm having. I'm not one to wait if I don't have to wait. And so if it's a boy, which my first child was, I go and buy a journal that has a boy theme. And then this was my second girl, and so I had bought a journal for her. And I take it to the hospital and have her little footprints put in it when she's born. And while I was in the hospital, I wrote a mother's first message to her child. And then I just kept this journal during her life. She lived 7 months and then passed away of crib death. If you had asked me how I would react to losing a child before it happened, I would have said, put me in a dark room and lock it up and throw away the key. I really couldn't even, I didn't even want to think about something like that happening. But I was able to use my journal as a way of recording what happened when I found her in her crib. I wrote about the ambulance ride, praying that she would make it, but knowing she was already gone. And there was a lot of hard things that we went through on the day of her death. We had to go down to a police station and go through interviews because it was a death in a home and they just put you through a homicide investigation.
Mm-hmm.
It's just protocol. It's not very pleasant when you're already dealing with tragedy, but it is what it is. Then we were living in San Jose, California at the time, and we buried her in Carson City, Nevada. So we drove through the Sierra Nevada mountains in our van with her casket and body inside, broke down, and had to be towed into Reno. And I will never forget standing in the parking lot of the rest area up in the mountains watching the tow truck pull away and seeing her casket inside. It was just almost surreal. And I had picked up my journal and I wrote down all that I went through. I just needed to get it out. And then many months later, I picked it up again and I wrote what I learned, because unlike my prediction, I was not devastated. I was not depressed. I was not needing to lock myself up in a dark room. I can honestly say that because of this experience, I know that God lives. And for me, it goes beyond faith, because there is no way I could have got through what I did without feeling the incredible presence of heaven. And on the day of her death, and even on the day of her funeral, heaven was so close that honestly, I'd go back to those days. I wouldn't want to live the ones after. But there is nothing like feeling the support of God. And sometimes I think we don't feel that true, deep, undeniable support until we're in a place where we cannot be supported in any other way. And so I wrote these things down in my journal, and I wrote it with an audience in mind. My children and my posterity, I wanted them to know not just about Bryn, because my writing of in the journal of Bryn before she passed away, it shows so clearly she was something special. She never cried. She never slept. It was almost like she knew she didn't have long. And I always said to her, Bryn, you are so sweet. There was just something about her. But I also wanted them to know that they can get through whatever trials or challenges will come along in their lives. So that is what I was writing, and that's who I was writing it for. Now, when you go through something difficult and you don't fall apart, people who know someone who's going through a similar challenge will come to you and ask, what did you do, or how did you get through that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I had a lot of people that would come to me and say, oh, my sister just lost a child, or my friend, or someone at church. And they'd ask me what they could say or do to help. Since I wrote my journal, I actually discovered a kind of technology for publishing that was brand new. Today it's not so unique, but at the time I had never seen it before. And that's what I call storybooking. And that's when you're able to publish these hardback, beautiful photo books that also include stories. You know, you can put your text in as well as your pictures.
And, uh-huh.
The company that I found is called Heritage Makers, And they actually were one of the very first companies to come up with this technology. And so I had put my journal and the pictures of my daughter into a book like that. And it was really healing to make that book. But what happened is when people would ask me what to tell their friend or their loved one, I was able to publish or print, I guess I'd say, another copy of this little storybook. And I'd give it to them and I'd say, share my story with them. Maybe there's something there that will help them. And I probably printed about 100 copies of that book and handed them out in various ways and times. And every time I shared my story in that way, I felt a sense of purpose and I healed. And so to try to shorten up the story, I went on to create I wrote a workbook and a program to help people who are grieving to go through a similar process as I did and to write their story of tragedy and finding purpose and triumph and preserving the memory of a loved one, but also finding what they can do now to serve others and to keep living with joy and purpose. And I did these bereavement groups with different hospices as a pilot test. And I would always tell the people that I was helping that they can overcome their grief. And I had a lot of bereavement counselors really get on me for saying that because I guess they're taught in their training, because every one of them, it seemed like, got on me and said, oh, we don't say that. We're not sure that's true. And they'd give me other catchphrases like, oh, you'll find a new normal, or in time it will, it'll slowly get better, but take all the time you need. And I'm not criticizing those things, except that to me it set the bar very low. They were never willing to give people in grief hope that they could feel better again. I thought it was kind of to some degree coddling and nurturing uh-huh. there. And so that's the reason why I wrote the first Triumph book. And then I just rolled right into wanting to write the stories of our veterans when I finished that one. So,
well, that catchphrase, then. A new normal is a catchphrase. It's been used a lot. I've heard a lot. I've even used it. And but it is good to hear someone like you who's gone through, you know, losing a child, which I can't imagine. I mean, it kills me to think about. But you know, to see how you've overcome your grief and really made a huge impact on a lot of people by what you've done since. Before we get into the Triumph book, maybe a little more of your veteran outreach. There's one story from, or I'm sorry, before we get into the Heroes book, there's one story from your first, you know, your Triumph book that stood out to me because I saw it first on probably 2020 or Dateline. And I think that was the story about Brooke, the girl that was from the Northwest and she was kidnapped. Can you just tell a little bit about that and how you chose that story and got the family to agree to let you put it in the book?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I guess a little piece of what I was just talking about that I left out is the reason I wrote the Triumph book was actually in response to the bereavement counselors telling me not to say that. So that was my way of saying, oh, yeah, well, let me show you.
There you go.
There's 20 stories that prove you can overcome your grief. But yeah, the story you're referring to was definitely in the news. It was the kidnap, rape, and murder of Brooke Wilberger, who is a young college student. She was actually attending Brigham Young University at the time, but she had gone home to Oregon and was working, helping to maintain and clean some apartments, and she disappeared. And for a long time, the family searched. And that's what's in the story, you know, what happened on the day she disappeared and what they went through, not even knowing where she was or what had happened to her. And interestingly enough, every story in that book, I found the authors through different, what I like to call breadcrumb trails. sometimes I one story would lead to another story, and sometimes I just had miraculous things actually happen that led me to the authors. But in this particular situation, my parents had been Brooke Wilberger's church leaders. My dad had been her bishop at the church where she went as a young woman. And And so they were very involved, my parents were, in all of this. And so they're the ones that introduced me to Cami Wilberger, who's Brooke's mother. And when I asked her if she would contribute her story, she was very happy to do so. Because I'm going to tell you, there is something very healing about being able to share a story.
Oh, yeah.
And feeling like it's going to make a difference in someone else's life. It makes what you went through matter. And so she was happy to do that. And a miraculous thing happened because at the time that I started working with her to collect her story, they still didn't know everything. They had found the man who had kidnapped and murdered her, but they didn't know the details. And they were in the midst of the trial. By the time the story was finished, right there at the very ending, this man plea bargained, and in the course of his plea bargain, he told them where her body was. And so right at the end, Cami was able to write about the process of finding her daughter's body. And what's amazing about that story is the incredible example of forgiveness that the Wilbergers have shown. I don't know how. I guess it's just like someone looks at me and says, I don't know how you got through the death of a child. I just couldn't get through that. To think about having one of my daughters go through what Brooke did and to have her murderer and rapist there admitting it, and for them to return such love and forgiveness is quite awesome to read her story. So,
yeah, I'll say. Well, yeah, as it says on the cover, stories of tragedy turned into triumph. So it's a great book. And both your books, they can be found, you know, on Amazon. Is that correct, Melanie? Both of them on Amazon. Yeah.
Amazon. Another place I can direct people to is I have since become a publisher, not just of my own books, but of others, including yours.
Yep.
Which I'm very proud of. I'm very honored, and I love talking about your book as well. But I've been able to publish a lot of great books. Triumph Press is my publishing company, and triumphpress.com is where you can go and find these books and see some of the other books that I've published. It's a genre of true and inspiring stories or self-help that I'm focusing on, although I've just recently branched out into creating a new division called Triumph Press Bedtime Stories. And these are children's books that are not necessarily true, but they are inspiring. And they're great books that teach values, and you can cuddle up with your kids and read them. And so that's Jack Malden is the first author in that series, and he has a book called The Christmas Ant that is just so colorful and fun. And this little ant just shows a great example of never giving up, of serving, of giving. And so I think it has the potential of being a real Christmas classic. Just the kind of books you want to read your children all year long, really. I told Jack, you need to write more books about this little ant and at different times of the year so that he can become a little friend to the children.
Well,
so
hopefully he gets known, well known soon. I know he had a launch recently, I believe, at a library. And so, anyway, hopefully it takes off and does well.
I think it has that potential for sure. We launched it in the spring. So that it would be out and ready, and we're building up to really release it more widely at Christmas time, of course. So
good. Well, let's talk about Triumph Book Heroes. And, you know, this one is, I don't know how many stories are in it, but these are obviously real true stories as well. And I was thinking, I mean, Melanie, is there maybe does something in particular stand out, maybe like a miraculous experience that happened when you're putting this together, maybe some dots that were connected that you never would have imagined would have happened, or just maybe a crazy, incredible story that you learned from interviewing all these people?
Yes to all of that.
I know, yeah, it's pretty broad, but maybe you could narrow it down and share something with us.
Well, like I said, at first I was writing it to increase patriotism, and then I wrote it I turned it into part of a campaign to, and Love Your Veterans is to raise awareness, appreciation, and support for our real heroes. And so my intention was to put a name, a face, and a life, or many lives, I suppose, in the course of there's 27 stories, to the word veteran. And so my target market, my intention was to educate, or is, I should say, to educate civilians so they can appreciate the hearts and minds of our protectors and see what they've endured and why. And when you see their hearts and you read their stories, it changes you. It really does. It makes you want to serve them, and we should want to serve them. And unfortunately, right now, we're doing a terrible job of that. Jay, can you get the dogs, please? Sorry about that. This is live from Texas. We're going to send the dogs out. There we go.
Right.
So when I started writing the book, the suicide rate was 18 a day. Today it's 22 a day, and I've heard it's probably much higher than that. So we're not doing a good job, and certainly cannot sit back and think that it's the government's job, because that's clearly not working.
Right.
And that's why I made it Love Your Veterans. It's personal. We need to take personal responsibility for the well-being of our heroes, and they struggle with so many problems and challenges. And to be honest, it wasn't really my intention at the outset of writing that book to shine a light on all the different challenges, but it really just came about in the course of writing it. I have a story of double amputation, or a couple of stories of amputation, an incredible story about PTSD that's told from the perspective of the veteran Matthew Brown, who was shot during the invasion of Fallujah. And it's his PTSD, which it's incredible what he had to go through, his wife's and his mother's. You find out that the family members go through, not just struggling with the pain of seeing their loved one hurt, but they have their own kind of PTSD. And this story is actually told from three perspectives. And I interviewed all three of them separately, and yet their stories wove together perfectly. And to me, that was a miracle of sorts, because they just touched on similar things, but from their perspective. And the thing that really, though, was the biggest surprise for me is how much this book helps veterans themselves, because it does touch on so many of their challenges. There's a story about a homeless veteran, and there's a story about suicide at the end. But what I have found is, in the course of promoting the book, and I always give it to veterans. I like to give them that as a thank you. And the response that I was getting back was unexpected, because they started telling me how much reading the book helped them to deal with their own issues and challenges, because they were learning from the veterans in the book. And I guess it shouldn't be a total surprise, because we always, that's kind of the purpose of the first book, you know, was to help people deal with their tragedies. But I guess I was a bit surprised at just how much it was helping them. And so I also shifted my focus from helping civilians to understand our veterans to helping veterans understand themselves by reading the stories.
Were there any maybe sad endings to some of the stories you were covering? Did any of them succumb to the demons that they were fighting because of, you know, the PTSD or some other issues they've been dealing with?
I would say the majority of the stories definitely are triumph stories, in that they have found ways to deal with their demons. Not necessarily completely and totally healed and over those demons, but definitely finding ways to live with it, or to reduce it, or to use them in a positive way. However, the very last story is a story of veteran suicide, It was told by the mother of Raymond Blunt, who was a Navy corpsman that served, I believe it was four tours back to back to back to back, which is not good for mental health, as you can imagine. But and being a corpsman, they see the trauma, they see the destruction as they work with the wounded. And he was on the base at Corpus Christi, and he basically barricaded himself and was on the phone with his mother and a negotiator. And his mother was able to talk to him, I believe it was about 4 hours, right up until the point when he then pulled the trigger and killed himself. Mm. And so it's a horrible story from the standpoint that it did end in suicide. The triumph of this story is that because she was able to talk to him and get inside of his mind and ask him questions or hear what he was saying, I believe that through her story and his death, we can have a better understanding of veteran suicide than we did before. And I think it's an extremely important story for people, especially people who are trying to help veterans, to understand what drives suicide. Because I actually have become somewhat involved in that aspect of military life. I founded a closed Facebook group called Families of Veteran Suicide. And, of course, it can be friends to anyone who's suffering the grief and the loss to veteran death to PTSD, suicide. And in the course of working with them, sometimes there is a lot of lack of understanding. And you'll hear people say, you know, even just generally relating to suicide, people say, oh, that's so selfish. You know, that's the selfish choice. That's never going to solve problems. My heart breaks when I hear people say that because they don't understand the battle that person faced before they took their life. I'm not sure they always have a choice. And I don't think you can ever really understand what would cause someone to reach that point without being able to get inside their mind and understand the perspective that they take. They feel they are doing us a service. They feel it's a love and a kindness to kill themselves. They really do, because they're a burden or because of the demons and what the demons are telling them and the hallucinations and what's causing these things. I don't know. It could be traumatic brain injury. It could be the drugs that we're putting them on is causing hallucinations. There's just so many things that that lead to veteran suicide that I think we could address if we had a better understanding of what's happening. The other thing, I guess, that's part of what might be the tragedy of the book is the model for the cover. I'm very in love with the cover of the book. It means a lot to me. It's a silhouette of a Marine who's standing what looks like up on a hill, and he's holding above him a book that's opened as if this is the greatest gift he has to give to the world. It's his story, and you can see a helicopter off in the distance as if he just stepped out of the battle to show you, here's my story. There was a Marine that I met at the health club where I worked out, and I was going to get his story. He had a really fascinating tattoo on his arm, and when I saw it, I knew he was a veteran because it's dog tags. And so one day I asked him what those stood for. I was thinking maybe he had lost a brother, and that was his dog tags that he had put on his arm. But he told me it was the dog tags of his sister. She had joined the Navy, and then he joined the Marines. So they had each other a dog tag tattooed to their forearm. And I thought, wow, what a cool story that would be. You know, a brother-sister story, and they got these mutual tattoos. So, good-looking young man. I invited him to please come and pose as the model for the cover, and he did a great job. But he committed suicide about 3 months before the release of the book. And so, that was personal. That was really personal for me because I cared about him a great deal. And so I've dedicated the book to him and to all the heroes that were losing to the battles at home. And in the book, there's a section called Behind the Story. That's where I write how I found that veteran. If the veteran represents a certain challenge, I will highlight a nonprofit that addresses that challenge. If the veteran is doing something, such as having written a book or started a nonprofit, then I use that as an opportunity to highlight those things. And so in this last story about Raymond Blunt, I also, in the behind the story, was able to tell the story of Johnny Zaladonis, who was the Marine that was my friend, and talk about his life and his death. So I guess in a sense, the book kind of ends on a very painful note.
But an important note. I mean, people need to know.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm looking at the picture of Johnny in the front right now, and then I saw in the back when you were talking about at the time of the writing of the book, which was in 2010 or 2011, you know, it was 18 suicides a day roughly, and we know it's more than that now, but also what you had in here was the Army Times reported there were 950 suicide attempts per month. So I'd never heard that before.
Yeah, I did a little research at the time, and I'm sure my research would turn up even higher numbers than what was there at the time. And you know, it was interesting that we just don't think about our veterans. Is one of the other things I highlighted, and I think it's still true today, is we're in an election year right now, 2016, and how much do we talk about the needs of our veterans as being a priority in terms of what candidate we choose? Or do we even hear the candidates talk much about veterans? And I got to tell you, my choice of candidate is going to be based largely on what are we doing to help our veterans, because we're kicking them to the curb right now. The VA is a mess. They're not getting the help they need. I think a lot of them commit suicide out of hopelessness. Where do they turn?
Sure, sure.
And so, yeah, it's really it's hard because it's hard not to be discouraged as I see it, and I see it not get much better. And as I see our society as a whole, I think that we've become apathetic to their needs, partly because we've had such a long, drawn-out period of war. I think people have just, during World War II, everybody was in the war together. The home front was working as hard as, in some ways, as the people in the front lines, trying to keep them equipped, and they sacrificed. And in our society today, we don't sacrifice for our veterans or our military. We don't even know where they are most of the time or what battles they're fighting. You don't read about that in the paper. You don't read about the deaths. You might see something flash on Facebook. And it's just amazing to me how completely disconnected we have become. And whether or not you agree with the wars that they're fighting, the fact that these young men and women sign up and are willing to die for our country, which I guarantee that's what the vast majority of them are doing, they love our country and they want to defend it.
That
needs to be appreciated. And where they fight and what they fight over, well, that's up to the politicians, and that, you know, ideally they're answering to society. So we can't hold them responsible for that. So, but sometimes we do, and certainly we punish the Vietnam veterans for their.
Well, and another thing that goes along with the, you know, maybe the suicide attempts and the PTSD is that the toll that it takes on their families. And I mean, you talked about that a little bit, but that's one thing that this podcast will definitely cover. And you know, I've got an Army Special Forces guy coming up soon in a few episodes that we'll be talking about that and how it affected him and his family and others who that it's, you know, it's brought about divorce and you know, you've got kids involved. And so anyway, it's just a real stressor. It can be a real stressor on a family, on, you know, and on your relationships.
Yeah, the sacrifices our veterans and their families make for us, most people have absolutely no idea. They think it's a job they sign up for and they get paid for, and they should just be grateful to get their paycheck. But it's so much more sacrifice than most people know.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, let's talk about a few of the things that you have done or are doing or planning to do, you know, to help our veterans. And you'll have to explain maybe what specifically how you're going to help them. But I mean, what are some things you've got going? I do know you've got the One Million Rounds campaign. Maybe you can update us on that, if that's still moving along, and then some other projects you've got going.
Yeah. In addition to supporting our veterans, I guess I would add, I'm a patriot to the core, your phrase, in that I am a firm believer in the Constitution and our rights. And I've created a campaign I call 1 Million Rounds. And it basically is taking the byproduct of exercising the Second Amendment, you know, the brass casings that fall from our guns when we shoot. And there's value in that. And it's a combination of recycling those casings to create art or products that can raise awareness and funds for the healing and the support of our veterans. And also, along with the 1 Million Rounds campaign, is the idea of creating a statue that represents or is it's a life-size rendition of an art image that you actually find on the back cover of the book, which I can describe what that looks like. It's really beautiful.
Do that, because I'm looking at it, but one else will probably have it right in front of them.
I'd be happy to send you the graphic if you want to post it on your website near this. I don't know if it works that way, but
yeah, send it to me. I'll see if I can get it in there.
It's the picture is of a soldier lying on the ground, and he has some guardian angels around him, surrounding him. In the picture, there's three. But it's based off of a true story that I was told, and it was too sacred to be written in the book, the person who told the story. But I wanted to convey this story, and so I commissioned an artist who is actually a veteran, Wes Scales, to capture the story in an image. And the story is that a soldier was wounded on the battlefield, and that he was being tended to by a female medic while a male soldier stood guard over him. When he got back to the base, he said the names of the two that were there helping him, and he was told that they had both been killed the month previous. And so I wanted to capture this story as a way of letting our military and their families know that they truly are watched over by heaven. And I have this printed on a big canvas that I take with me when I do different events. And I'll often have big veterans stand in front of it with tears in their eyes. And sometimes they'll lean over to me and they'll say, I've had a similar experience. I just think it's an important message. And, of course, being a believer in God as I am, I also love to convey the reality of his existence and his support for us through angels and all the ways that he lifts us up. So 1 Million Rounds, one of the parts of this campaign is to create a life-size statue of this art that I would love to take on tour across the country, that allows people to hear the story. And the stories that the statue represents as well, in terms of the stories in the hero's book. I have a metal artist in England that I've been talking with that I would like to have build this statue. And what's really cool is that he's been collecting all kinds of military artifacts and memorabilia, things like the barbed wire from Normandy, or the brass casings from the bombers that took off from England. And I would do a call for military artifacts, and we would build them into this statue so that when people look at it, it would almost be like a Where's Waldo, like a puzzle. You'd have a checklist as you looked at it, and you'd find where's the barbed wire in this statue, and where's this and that. Like, it's really looking at that carefully and taking time. It would not necessarily be built entirely out of brass because it's soft, but the plan is to use brass in a real unique way, where we would highlight certain aspects of the statue, such as having their faces be brass, shining, and having brass, running down an IV maybe to the arms, the lifeblood, or just sort of incorporating it in different ways. And allowing it to become something of great beauty that would really be a draw. The other aspect of this is I've been networking with some veteran nonprofits, one in particular that is creating a really unique and what I think will be a wonderful program that helps veterans that are struggling, to give them housing, to put them in programs that give them job training. And they've actually already got a metalworking facility where they will actually be hired and able to work and earn money and kind of be integrated back into society through this training. And so I'm talking with them about actually being able to collect this brass from across the country that people can share as a way of supporting our veterans. We can all find ways to do that, even if it's small and simple things. But it's a little bit like March of Dimes, except instead of donating dimes, they're just donating their spent brass.
Mm-hmm.
And they will get a smelter and a forge, and actually veterans will be producing products with the recycled brass that people donated for them. And then my hope is, I'm just giving you my vision here, but I'd love to connect with like Bass Pro Shop or Gander Mountain or some of these places, or all of them, and maybe have them sell this line of brass products that could be like a light switch plate or an electric outlet cover or things that can be in the home, so that when people see them, and we'll stamp it with the 1 Million Rounds logo, they'll look at that, and every time they turn on the light, they'll be like, you know what? I am free because of a veteran. It's just a reminder, and it will raise money for them. So, that's just kind of touching on the vision of that. There's a lot more detail to it, but I'm still working on it, but making progress little by little and meeting people who catch the vision and want to get involved. And my hope is I can put together a really good plan, and with the facility to actually receive and do something with the brass, that maybe I can get out and reach out to some of these recreation type companies and see if they'd like to put up I'd love to put up a box where people drop off their brass as they enter the store.
Yeah, yeah.
And then go buy something. I also intend to get gun ranges involved. I did a pilot test at a gun show in Dallas, and I talked to every gun range at the expo, and I had a 100% support rate, saying, yes, we would love to participate in this program. So I think it's something that could really succeed. And, of course, what I love about it is it puts a positive light on shooting. I know that those who would like to take that right away from us like to call the weapons assault weapons and assign all these terms and things to scare people and make people afraid of guns or think we don't deserve guns or shouldn't use guns. And when in reality, a gun in the hands of a good person will stop many, many deaths.
Yeah, that's right. And
I very much, to me it's not political, because how can our rights, our God-given right, be some? I think it gets politicized, but it definitely has that pro-Second Amendment element to it, which I think anyone who wants to support our veterans and believes in the country they fight for, well, I think those are the same people that would probably be really happy to see the Second Amendment being defended at the same time through what this program can be and convey to people. So,
well, those are unique. I think just simple, unique things people can do to support. I mean, what else comes to your mind that either you've championed or that maybe just ideas you have of ways that we, mm-hmm. you know, just everyday people can support our veterans?
Well, that's what the message is, especially in the final and the conclusion of the Triumph Book Heroes. It talks about ways that we can support our veterans. And the thing is, they've given so much to us, and we can give something back. If we don't have money, we can give time. If we don't have time, we can give money. If we don't have much of either, you know, give your talent. Find a way to make your business or to set up your business so that somehow it gives back. And there's a lot of examples of businesses who are doing that. And I highlight a few of them in the book. There's a realtor in Dallas who actually networked with me and said, you know what, I want to give back to veterans. And she gives a large percentage of her commission when she sells a home. She calls her homes that she sells in support of veterans her Love Your Veterans listings. And you know, when people work with her, they know they're supporting veterans. And I think it's a great marketing angle as well. And I think any company that steps up and says, hey, if you shop with us and we'll give a percentage of veterans, or just, you know, I selected my septic company because they serve veterans. That was the deciding factor for me. And that always is. If I see a company that shows openly that they do something for veterans, that's the one I choose to use. And I'd love to have our public look for that. But I think that individually, each and every one of us can find something we can do. And the great thing is, once you start serving veterans, then you catch the bug, and you always want to serve them. So it's just a matter of getting started.
Yeah, well, I know that you're actively involved in a lot of things. I mean, I've seen you over the years at, you know, speaking on the state capitol steps, and you're you know, meeting with different music artists, and you've always got something you're working on or pursuing. And I mean, really, how do you? You've got you're a wife, you're a mother. You've got, is it four kids?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you? I guess personally, how do you manage all this?
You passed away, so.
Exactly. Yes.
I'll tell you, it's hard to balance it. It really is. And sometimes I don't feel like I'm doing a very good job of anything, and that's challenging. I don't always do as much as I'd like to for veterans or for my children, even for myself. I've had some difficult health challenges over the past year that I'm finally coming out of. I got struck down with mono that lasted forever, and I just was literally the walking dead, and I really think it's because I overdo things. So I'm trying to learn to be smarter, and I don't know, I don't have all the answers for how to do that, but sometimes I think that life ebbs and flows, and sometimes we have energy and resources, and we do the most we can with them, and there's other times when it's more of a meditative time to trust God and maybe sort of reconnect with God and figure out what direction he wants you to go in. So I hadn't been quite as active for a while in my veteran. I do as much as I can when I get the opportunity, but I'm starting to get reconnected again with that, and I've met some great people. One of the projects that I'm working on right now that I'm really excited about is it's a kind of veteran housing that we're going to be putting together what we're calling green zone communities or green zone housing. And these are houses that veterans will actually be assisted to project manage and build on their own. But they're built out of shipping containers, which is something that's become quite popular, especially I think over in the Asian countries where they've built whole apartment complexes out of these. And they're very affordable and functional. And so we'll be helping veterans can build their own homes, and they'll be a part of a community and where they'll have job training and the ability to provide for themselves. And and take, you know, have pride of ownership, and they can stay as long as they want, or if they move on, that house will take, will keep the name, and the next person to move in will be living in the John Smith house, or the, you know, whatever the name is of the person that built it. And that is really exciting to me, and we're actually getting a lot of support and progress. I live in the Houston, Texas area, and so I think you're going to see this coming together before long. It also means a lot to me because the name of it, Green Zone Housing, is a project I worked on some years ago in the Dallas area. We were going to convert an old historic hotel into veteran housing, and I was a part of that project, and I was really the one that said, hey, let's call it Green Zone Housing. And Green Zone, of course, is a military term that refers to the space that they can go to when they're not up fighting on the front lines. It's where they can decompress and feel a sense of some sense of peace, and that's what we want this to be, a place where they can feel like they can go to feel that sense of peace, or to sort of recharge. So the name of it is significant, and it's neat to me because it's a project I worked on for a while, and it didn't come to fruition. And now I get to see it worked on again, and I kind of like this plan even better. So life has a way of, you know, you think you work on something that's failing, but it's really just that the time isn't quite right.
Yeah,
Well, yeah, I'll put some in the show notes. People can find you by triumphpress.com. They can find you by loveyourveterans.org. Yeah. Anywhere else, Melanie?
It isn't up yet, but maybe if they listen to this in the future, there will probably be a website called greenzonehousing.com or .org or both. And that's where we'll be able to learn a little bit more about what we're working on there.
Good. Well, I guess we're getting up over 50 minutes. Is there anything you want to say in closing?
I just encourage everyone to look for the triumph in whatever hardship they're going through, because it's always there if you look for it. And the best way to find that is absolutely in serving others. And to me, the best people to serve are our veterans. That's how I'd summarize it.
Okay. Well, good. I was actually writing that down. That was pretty good. So, best way to overcome is to serve others. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for your time. I've really enjoyed it, you know, you've been a big help to me. And as I've already told the listeners in the intro, I mean, you not only published my book, but you helped me in the process, and you're still available to help me, you know, when I need it too. So we've got to get that thing in Costco somehow, Melanie.
We do, and I love your brother. I honor him, and I'm always there to help you and to honor his memory in any way I can. I guess we should mention I also have a chapter in the Heroes book is of your brother, which is how we met, was including a chapter about him and then moving on to writing a whole book about him. So, yeah, it's an honor to know you and to get to work so closely with you, Dad.
Well, thank you. You dedicated several pages to my brother, and it was well done. And you not only talked to me, but talked to at least one other teammate, Brian Floyd. I can't remember if anyone else was involved with that or not, Melanie.
Yeah, I did. I interviewed Brian, his teammate. Just that was a great person to talk with. And I think other than that, I just was able to put some of the things that others had written about him into it as well. So.
Well, I still think that Costco doesn't like the cover of Mark's book. It's my opinion. I even blogged about it. I think they think it's a little too harsh. They haven't said that, but oh well. I mean, I'm not changing it.
I don't get that because I absolutely love it. I love that he's in all his gear, his kit, or whatever they call it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then on his head is his Alabama hat, and it's dusty and dirty, but just a good old boy. I love it. I love it. And he looks so tough and handsome. I can't imagine. And there's the bronze star on the cover. I can't imagine a better cover. I don't know. I don't know. Hopefully they have just somebody there will read it, and then they'll know. Because like I've said before, my son read it when he was about 17, and it had a dramatic effect on his life. It is really, it's an important book that will change people's lives to read it. So.
Well, yeah. Hey, I appreciate that plug. I wasn't even expecting that or even wanting it, but I'll definitely take it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Melanie. Will, I'll let you go, and we'll talk sometime soon. Good luck in all of your endeavors, too. I think the 1 Million Rounds, the green zone housing, I mean, it's just some fantastic stuff, and it just starts with a simple idea, and, you know, the ball can just continue to roll forward and gain momentum. It will. It has, and I think it will continue to.
I do believe that. I think that it will have its day and its time, and I think at that point I'll be in a position, too, to bring your book to light more, and all the military stories I've been able to publish over the years. There's a lot of military books on my website. So I'd love to make a little more successful than they have been. So.
Yeah. We'll keep fighting the good fight.
Yes, we will.
Well, thank you, Melanie. I'll talk to you soon.
All